Hello, and welcome to Catholicism in the Car. My name is Parker Zirbal. Okay. Today, I want to talk about an answer to the question, what is the good news of Jesus Christ? What is the gospel? I think at least among Catholic circles, this is honestly not talked about very much. And I think the answer to it does somewhat depend upon one's personal and also one's cultural situation. As to what I mean by that is, it can depend which facet, which emphasis of the good news will strike either a particular person or a particular culture or community as you could say, the best of the good news. What is the most important part of the good news for them? So I think it might help first just for me to say what I find, at least currently in my life, to be one of the most interesting, but also one of the most psychologically satisfying aspects of the good news of Jesus Christ. And this is a topic I've discussed a fair amount recently, and that is that Jesus Christ's death on the cross and his resurrection infuses meaning into the suffering of our lives. I think that is one of the greatest parts about the gospel, is that we can know that suffering will always be a part of our life, that the default state of our life is suffering. But that suffering has meaning when it is united to the cross of Christ. And I wish, I beg, that my Protestant brothers and sisters, that all of them would be able to fully embrace this truth. I know that many do. I know that many do. But many don't as well. They don't see the value in something like penance, which is, by its very nature, the act of uniting one's sufferings with the cross of Christ. And that the cross of Christ gives our sufferings not only meaning, but merit. In a certain sense, because within Christianity, when we talk about merit, it's not about what I do in order to get something back. It doesn't mean I do, I give $5 to 5 different homeless people, and therefore I'm 5% closer to heaven or something, 5% holy. You know, that's ridiculous. I'm sorry, but that's ridiculous. I don't think any heretic, even Pelagius and the Pelagians, nobody has ever espoused anything as ridiculous as that. I'm sorry, that doesn't exist. That's a fiction that has been thrown around by people who misunderstand either the Catholic or the Orthodox position. And also the position, I might say, of like Methodists, at least traditional Methodists within Protestants, and also many Armenian Christians. And I think I've explained those things a little bit in the past. So if you would enjoy going back to one of those episodes and learning about what Armenianism is, and also what Methodism is, feel free to take a look back at some of those older episodes, but then also, there's some great videos on YouTube, and on the internet in general about those two topics. So, I think that one of the most important aspects of the good news for me, and I think also for our present culture, is the fact that our sufferings can have meaning through the cross of Christ. And again, not just meaning, but merit. In the sense that they can do, our suffering can even do positive good. Positive good for others through the grace of God by being united to Jesus Christ on the cross. St. Paul says, through my sufferings, this is in Colossians 2, or maybe it's 1, Colossians 1:29, I want to say. Through my sufferings, I fill up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. That for me, is such an incredible facet of the good news. And I want everyone to know that whenever you're enduring any sort of suffering, you can unite that suffering in love to Jesus as he suffers with you, because the cross is an eternal event. The cross, so to explain this a little more deeply, why did Jesus have to die on the cross? I think one of the best explanations of that, and there have been many, many people throughout Christian history who have offered various explanations of this, but to me, one of the best ones is Christ died on the cross to heal what could not be healed. He died on the cross to be an infinite healing for an infinite offense, for an infinite sin, which was the first sin, the original sin, as well as every subsequent sin afterwards. When we hurt God, you cannot just hurt God a little bit. If you hurt him at all, you hurt him entirely. Okay, that's kind of inherent in what we believe about God. Because of God's divine simplicity, the fact that he has no parts, right? The fact that he is purely one, but yet mysteriously three persons in one God, right? So, his divine simplicity, his divine unity, and also his divine infinity. I talked about a few episodes ago why I love the Franciscan school of theology. And if you go and you read Blessed John Duns Scotus, who is one of the main pillars, along with St. Bonaventure, of the Franciscan school of theology, Scotus says that the primary definition of God is his infinity. That is the purest definition of God that we have, is the infinite. And he says that because really anything else that we try to give, even like the transcendentals, truth, goodness, and beauty, we say God is all goodness. What happens? We start to envision material things around us, things that are good. We don't have a concept, really, of purely abstract goodness. The same with truth and beauty. We don't really have purely abstract concepts of those. But infinity, Scotus argues, we have no concrete imagination of infinity. It is, I think he argues, really the only purely abstract concept that we can have. And therefore, it is most fitting that that concept is the primary concept that we should use in regard to God, is his infinity. And I think this, when we take that the main concept we should use about God is his infinity, and we apply it to salvation history, there's a lot of amazing things that start to click together. And it is that before man sinned against God, God had not experienced, being hurt by man. Now, the tradition goes, he was hurt by Satan and the fall of the angels before the fall of man, right? I mean, there are also some traditions that will say that the fall of the angels happened coincident, kind of, with the original sin. But I think Genesis is pretty clear that because the serpent, because Lucifer was there present in the garden and he tempted Eve, that it's pretty clear that he was already fallen, right? It wasn't that act of tempting Eve wasn't the act that he fell as well, right? That he fell away from the grace of God as well. So that the original sin, that original act of hurting God, was an infinite break in God. So if you think of like a timeline, it goes infinite in both directions, which I'm pretty sure a lot of people will distinguish that as eternal, is when it goes in both directions. Infinite, a lot of people will say, is when it goes, when it goes in one direction. So that original sin, it broke that timeline. And one break in that timeline, because you think of a line, a line is made up of an infinite amount of points. And points are basically just concepts we have for, like, the smallest thing you can think of. An indivisible part. So if you break a timeline, you're breaking an indivisible part of it. You're breaking a point on that timeline, basically. You're breaking something that's indivisible. You're breaking something that cannot be broken. You're introducing a rift into reality that, unless something infinite comes along and repairs the infinite break, then there is nothing that can be done to fix it. Absolutely nothing. And this is why it was necessary. It was necessary for Jesus Christ to come, for God to become enfleshed in human flesh, in order to repair that infinite break. Now there's a whole another theological facet to this that is fascinating, and I want to do an episode on it, or multiple episodes on it. And it's one of the defining aspects of the Franciscan school of theology, and that's the primacy of Christ, that that Jesus would have become incarnate, would have become man, whether man had sinned or not. So that's a topic for another day. But because of that infinite break, there needed to be an infinite power to resolve it, to heal it. Man could never heal that by anything that he does. And subsequently, any sin done after that original sin is just, it's additional breaks, infinite breaks to that first break. And they can never be healed unless the divine, unless the infinite heals them. And there's a whole thing about why he had to become man and all that. And why that was necessary. And that's a topic for another day, in related to what I just said about the primacy of Christ, the Franciscan school of theology, all that kind of fun stuff. But the best part about the good news to me, at least right now, is that Jesus Christ came and died on the cross for us, endured infinite suffering for us to heal the infinite break that we have caused, that the original sin of Adam and Eve caused, and that each of us have caused by our own personal sin throughout history, either before Christ or after. Yeah, so Protestants and other Christians besides Orthodox and Catholics can get on board with that. But what a lot of them can't get on board with is this extra layer of incredible beauty and also, like, honestly, psychological help that is brought by being able to unite our sufferings in our lives with the cross of Christ. And then even more additionally, for those sufferings to be transformed by Jesus' suffering for the good of the church and for the good of mankind in general and for the glory of God. The fact that every time I stub my toe, because I'm a pretty clumsy person, every time I stub my toe or hit my hand on something and it hurts, I can offer that in union with Jesus' sacrifice on the cross for the good of my brothers and sisters around me, whether here on earth, in purgatory, and I mean, those in heaven don't need it, and those in hell have no use for it. So, you know, really, it's just those on earth and those in purgatory. So, yeah. I just think that is such a wonderful aspect of the good news, that our suffering has meaning. And not that it just has meaning, but it has value in that we can do something with it for the good of not only ourselves, but for the good of our fellow man. Thank you. Oh, real quick, please feel free to subscribe to any of my podcasts on any of the podcast players. Find me on YouTube. Please subscribe. Like me on Facebook, like the Catholicism Car channel on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're all there, Catholicism Car. And then I also have a Patreon account if you wish to support what I do at this podcast and this YouTube channel. And you can also support us on anchor.fm. There's a support button there you click on. I also have links to all of this on my website's support page at www.catholicisminthecar.com.